This is Digital Story Podcast number 1019, September 30th, 2025. Today's theme is the rise of AI-generated headshots. I'm Derek Story. I just had an encounter with a potential client who opted for an AI-generated headshot over an in-person session. I did get to see the result, and it prompted me to do some research on this very popular alternative to photography. That experience and what I learned is the top story of today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. I think it's interesting when sometimes a seemingly simple experience leads to all sorts of things, research and shock and awe and frustration, and you go, wow, I didn't see this coming at all. And that's kind of what happened to me with a client that I have. They wanted to update some of their senior staff headshots for their webpage. And I said, great, I love doing that. It's a fun gig. And basically what I do is I go on location. You know, we find a spot there at the corporate headquarters to make it convenient for them. I have a portable studio. I mean, it's really portable and is really good too. And the lighting fits in a roller suitcase. And of course I have my camera and all that stuff. And we line it up. We line up a schedule. We try to get 4, 5, 6, 7 people to make it cost effective for them. And when we get a number of people, it is very cost effective. Only for me anyway, I only charge $125 per person if we get enough people. So we were all lined up and ready to go. I had done a test the day before, make sure all my equipment was functioning properly. And I show up on site and we start going. The person who was coordinating this job said to me, well, I think we're only going to have 4 today instead of 5. And I go, oh, that's interesting. Did someone call in sick or is there some sort of issue? And she goes, well, no, not exactly. She decided that she wanted to go with an AI-generated headshot instead of coming in person here. And I go, oh, wow, that's really fascinating. So we talked about it a little bit. And while we were having the conversation, some of which I'm going to share with you in a minute, I said, I'd like to see the shot. Do you have the shot that she submitted? She goes, I do, actually. She pulled it up on her phone. And I got to see the shot that's going on to their webpage. And she is part of senior staff. It was super interesting for me as I was looking at this image of the senior staff member. I noticed a couple things, and this is part of what prompted me to do more research after this photo shoot to learn more about this alternative to in-person photography. So the first thing I noticed right away on this shot was that there were no catch lights in the eyes. I found that, well, honestly, a little disturbing in the sense that it had a little bit of a zombie feel to it for me. As I started researching about the different alternatives that you have, the different choices you have for AI-generated headshots, and really started looking at a whole bunch of examples, some generators do have catch lights or some sort of light in the eyes, and some don't. So this is not something that's consistent across all the different services. This particular service, she did not have catch light in the eye. You know, right away, we're losing some life, you know, in this image. The second thing I noticed was that there was no hair light or any sort of light on the hair, which I always think is important for headshots because not only does it separate, you know, the person from the background or help separate the person from the background, it adds another dimension of light. And depending on the type of hair that the person has, sometimes you get some really nice effects with a hair light. Sometimes it simply is a tool for separation, but it's almost always really good. And the hair was a very dark on top, and it actually didn't have a whole lot of lighting on the sides either. So I'm looking at this picture, and looking at the skin and all that kind of stuff. And for the most part, it was okay. It was fine. It was fine. It wasn't as good as what we ended up producing with the in-person sessions, but it was fine. And so I was talking with this coordinator a little bit more about why the senior staff member decided to opt for an AI-generated headshot instead of, you know, the one in person. I was kind of guessing initially that it was going to be a price difference. Generally speaking, you can get an AI-generated headshot for as little as $29 up to like $79, so somewhere in that range. But generally, they're like $29, $35, and you usually get variations for that money. So, you know, it's a very cost-effective way. These people are making, you know, good salaries, right? So I'm not sure that the difference between $29 or $35 or whatever she paid for that and $125 would be that big of a difference for someone, you know, at this level. Now, if you're a college student putting together your LinkedIn page, you know, I could see that difference having more weight. But for a senior staff member for a big company, probably not that big a difference. I kept probing and kept asking about that. And the next thing that came up surprised me a little bit, which was she was nervous about coming in and having her picture taken in a live session. It was causing anxiety for her. Whereas if she put together an AI shot, you know, through a service, there's no anxiety at all. Basically, the way these things work is, and it varies from service to service, but you submit a number of selfies. Usually they like 10 or 15 selfies so they can get a real feel for who you are. It's a little bit like when you're setting up the fingerprint authorization on your smartphone where they have you roll your finger around and move it around, you know, right? Get all these different angles so that it can really make sure that it's you. And so the AI model, you know, likes having, you know, more data, different angles, kind of different views, different lighting of a person, you know, to build its model. The second part of it is, of course, you fill out some information. And again, this varies from service to service. Sometimes, you know, you're adding your height, your weight, eye color, all that kind of stuff. Again, more information for the AI model to build as accurate of a representation of you as possible. But all this can be done on your laptop, you know, sitting on your couch, not dealing with people at all. So I don't think in this particular case, it was really the difference in price as it was the difference between having an in-person experience versus something that's very private and very sitting in your own little space, adding information to a website. Now, this person had not met me, right? I have never met her before. So she didn't know how easy this was going to be with me, right? She's never had a photography experience with me. And I guess the person that had done the headshots before, let's just say that there were mixed results, both with the pictures themselves, but also with the experience. So there might have been a little bit of, you know, bad taste resulting from that. She just wanted to avoid, just wasn't in the mood. Who knows what it was, but whatever it was the difference between coming in for in-person and doing an AI-generated headshot was that human experience. Which is fascinating for me as a photographer because the human experience is what often makes the shot, is what often really allows me to, you know, capture that person and then create an image where that, whatever that personality is, comes out of that image, oozes out of that image. What I see as a plus in this case was viewed as a negative. So I said, okay, you know, that's fine. So we went ahead and we did the other four that were lined up. And I have to say, they really brought it, all four of them. The images just turned out terrific. It's a beautiful gallery. Kind of an irony in this is that in my post-processing, I use a little AI. I do. I use AI processing tools. The tools I use for this photo shoot, the Nikon ZF full-frame camera. I use the Viltrox 85mm f1.8 lens. And that lens is really good for portraits. It's an autofocus lens as well. And it just does a fantastic job. On the ZF, very careful about, you know, what I choose for profile. And so I use Nikon's portrait profile. And I also turn on skin softening. The ZF has built-in skin softening, and it has different degrees of it. I usually go with kind of a medium level of skin softening. And I do shoot RAW plus JPEG, but the RAWs are only safety nets. I don't use the RAWs at all because they don't have the tools of that Nikon builds into the JPEGs. They don't have the skin softening and all that kind of stuff, the color profile. I use the JPEGs and just keep the RAWs in case something just goes totally wonky on me. What happens is that the JPEGs that come out of the camera are so good, I don't have to do a whole lot to them. I mean, they really look good. Skin looks good. I have a really nice lighting scheme for headshots. The whole deal. And I do this for a couple reasons. One of them you know about, because I've talked about before, that it really builds rapport during the photo shoot. If you can show someone some of the pictures that you just took of them, they see how good they look on the viewfinder, and then suddenly they really loosen up, and then you get even better pictures. It builds momentum in the right direction. So I want these in-camera shots to look fantastic, because that means I'm going to get even better shots. And that was the case with this photo shoot as well. So the RAWs, you know, they get saved, but I'm working with the JPEGs only on these photo shoots. I don't need the RAWs because the JPEGs are so good, right? And I'm only making minor tweaks. Then I use Luminar Neo for the processing of the shots because it's got some really nice portrait tools in there. And it allows me, if I need to do something to the skin, I can do that. If I need to do something with the face in terms of, you know, brightening it up a little bit, which I never have to do, but, you know, that's there. I can thin the face a little bit, and it does that very well. I can brighten the lips a bit, you know, all that kind of stuff. Whiten the teeth a hair if I need to. These are all AI-generated tools, so it's not like I'm anti-AI at all, or I'm afraid of AI, or we don't use AI in our traditional photography. I think it's just I'm using AI much differently than a purely AI-generated headshot. The gallery then gets posted, as I mentioned, and then they get to take it from there. As I said earlier, it turned out really well. After the photo shoot, and after I went through this whole experience, I started doing a little research about headshot AI generators, and I found that there's really quite a world there. It's a whole thing. I'm just going to read you, AI-generated summary here from Google. The best AI headshot generator depends on your priorities, but Headshot Pro is often cited for its photorealistic quality and high ceiling of usable images, while BetterPick is praised for its customization and detailed studio-like 4K outputs. Other top contenders include Argon AI, known for realistic results and ease of use, and DreamWave, noted for its strong data security and privacy framework. There are all sorts of AI generators out there. It goes on and on. So, how to choose? Consider these factors when making your selection. Realism versus stylization. Some tools focus on hyper-realistic results, while others offer far more artistic or stylized options. Customization. Options like BetterPick allow for extensive tweaking of backgrounds, clothing, and lighting. data security and privacy. If this is a concern, platforms like DreamWave have robust frameworks in place. User friendliness, tools like Aragon AI are praised for their straightforward and easy-to-use interfaces. And speed, if you need your headshots quickly, look for services that emphasize fast turnaround times. By the way, the turnaround times vary with the services. It can be as little as an hour. A lot of them will cite like 2 hours or so. Some are longer. Some are 12 hours, you know, and you have to wait a bit longer. But regardless, generally speaking, you're going to get same day service with a headshot generator compared to a photographer that usually will take a little bit longer. I did the photo session on Friday, and I had the gallery waiting for the coordinator on Monday morning. So not too bad, but still longer than an AI generator for sure. I continued my research and I found an article on Medium.com, you know, trying all these different headshot services and comparing them. The article is, I tested 30 plus AI headshot generators. Here are the best 17 tools ranked for realistic results. And it was published on January 2nd, 2025. What the author did was, it was pretty interesting. She did a comparison of all these different AI generators. She posted pictures that each of them produced, which is fascinating. And the pictures, generally speaking, are quite good. I mean, a lot of them have a very photorealistic appearance to them. You know, one of the things that I think is fascinating is that, you know, she submitted a number of selfies to all these services. But in terms of the pictures that are produced, she's wearing all sorts of different clothing. She's in different settings. You know, sometimes she's in an office space. Sometimes she's outside, standing in front of some landmark. Sometimes she's standing at a lectern, like she's, you know, speaking. I thought it was just, you know, really kind of fascinating how this bunch of selfies could produce so many different results. Now, when she was analyzing these results, and she did posted a little video in the article too, where she really talked about shots that she liked with Headshot Pro, and, you know, shots that she wasn't as crazy about. You know, I thought, wow, this is pretty interesting. And the shots that she liked were the ones, of course, this makes perfect sense, were the ones that she thought looked the most like her. In other words, she liked the way her hair looked in these shots. She liked some of the outfits. She liked some of the settings. The shots that she didn't like, there would be something that wasn't true to who she was. For instance, all the shots that she likes, she has a partial smile. In other words, her lips are together, but you know, it's starting, like the smile's beginning to unfold, but there are no teeth. The shots that she didn't like were the shots where she had a big smile and her teeth were showing, because the AI generator made her teeth perfect. And she doesn't have perfect teeth. I mean, her teeth aren't terrible by any stretch of the imagination. They look fine, but the AI generator, whenever she had a smile, would make perfect teeth. And she, you know, she's going, well, that's not me. That's not my smile. Those would automatically get ruled out. Now, you get a bunch of different shots to choose from, throw away half of them, and you still have 11 shots or 10 shots or whatever. As I was looking at them, again, I'm looking at this like a photographer. I think the skin texture, for the most part, was pretty good on these. The lighting, there's mismatch lighting a lot of times. Like, she would be in an outdoor setting, but it would be studio-like lighting on her. A lot of people aren't going to notice that. Photographers will notice that. So that, to me, was a mismatch. I talked about catch lights before, and sometimes there are catch lights in the eye, sometimes there aren't. On the ones where there aren't catch lights, though, it doesn't work for me. The eyes don't have the life that I want. I think that overall, these images, to a non-photographer are very acceptable. They're very refined. You look very good, right? You know, the AI generators make you look good. And that's one of the things that she liked about them too. And she was talking about why she prefers an AI generator to a live photo session. And one of the things that she kept mentioning was that with a live photo session, you're going to have shots where your hair isn't right, or there's something about the picture that you don't like. Whereas with the AI generated shots, you know, everything is always looking good. You know, your eyes look good, your hair looks good, your skin looks good, all that kind of stuff. Now, I would have a little pushback on that. Like, for instance, stray hairs or a crooked piece of jewelry or something like that. We can fix that in post these days quite easily. I mean, honestly, we can change the color of outfits easily. We can do a lot of stuff that was difficult before that's very easy now. So from a photographer's perspective, there is some pushback. The things that she cited as downsides with a good photographer aren't really downsides. Kept researching after that. I liked her article a lot, and I'll list it in the show notes. Then we have another article by CBD Photography, and it's called The Hidden Dangers of AI-Generated Headshots, What You Need to Know. Now, this is from a photographer's perspective. It's a pretty balanced article. However, he does raise some issues. One of the things he does do, he shows his opening graphic, kind of old school AI generated images that just, you know, reek of AI. They're very stylized, illustrative look, and not really photorealistic. Nothing like what I saw when I was researching this with the current headshot sites that do very photorealistic shots. So that was a little bit of a thing. But he does talk about the price differences and how AI headshots are more affordable. They're also more convenient, right? Because you're just sitting in your room submitting a number of selfies. He also does raise some issues, you know, being authentic versus inauthentic. How important is it for you to have a very authentic photo that truly represents who you are, as opposed to maybe a more stylized version of you that goes beyond your best self into something that's even more perfect? So he raises that issue. He raises some concern about security. Are all services, do they guard your personal information, or does the images that you submit, are they used other ways? Is the images that it generates, are they limited to your use only, or will they show up somewhere else? Gets into the whole thing about data security. And then finally talks about the value of human connection in photography and how that human connection, if established, does show up in the final picture, whereas the AI-generated shots are a little bit more sterile, for lack of a better term. I'll also put the link to that article in the show notes. Where do I stand on all of this? I think it's like so many other disruptive technologies, where I don't think the disrupted technology is going to wholly replace the technology that came before it. In other words, I don't feel like that AI generated headshots are going to put photographers out of business. In my case, even in this one instance, I lost one subject, but I still had four others that I did do, and that turned out really well. So, okay, maybe it cut into it, but it didn't wholly replace it. And I just don't see that happening. The other thing that I think is that these services make headshots available to people who normally wouldn't get them anyway, right? Like if you're a college student putting together a LinkedIn page, or you need a picture for your resume and you need to have it in a couple hours, you're not going to go to a pro photographer for that anyway. In fact, what you'll probably do is try to do it yourself. It's not going to have the same results, and an AI-generated headshot is clearly superior in that situation. So I think a lot of the uses for AI-generated headshots are instances where the subject probably wouldn't go to a pro photographer anyway. And then there are always going to be people who value the artistic ability that a pro photographer brings to a headshot session. And those folks are going to keep using photographers. So I just think, if anything, it sort of broadens the landscape. We're going to have more good-looking headshots out there as a result of this. I think photographers are going to take a little bit of a ding, but probably not a huge hit. We'll see. We'll see. I could be wrong about that part of it. We'll see how big a hit I take over, you know, the coming months and years. But right now, I just feel like, as much as anything, it's broadening the landscape. If you want to learn more about it, do a search. And you know, the links I provide to the article will give you kind of a head start on that. But it is fascinating. It truly is interesting. It all started with just such an innocent thing. And next thing you know, I'm knee deep in AI-generated headshots. What a world. I have time for just a couple little camera news stories. I'm going to start out. We're going to kind of keep going with this digital thing. This is an article that's on Petapixel. New digital art restoration method can save the world's dying artworks. And I have a link in the show notes to this article. Most of the world's art is locked away and will never be seen. This isn't due to any nefarious reason, simply the ravages of time. Historical paintings are degraded and can require months, years, or even a decade of sluggish, painstaking restoration. As a result, about 70% of the paintings in institutional collections are not on public view. Fortunately, MIT engineer Alex Kochkine has developed a digital art restoration method that revitalizes artworks in a fraction of the time taken by conventional hand painting methods. By using deep learning methods to create a thin mask that's applied over a damaged painting, Kochkine hopes to save countless artworks languishing in dark drawers and lonely back rooms. He became enamored with art while on a childhood trip to McNay Art Museum in San Antonio, Texas, a seascape by famed French Impressionist Pierre-Augustin Renoir captured Kochkine's attention and imagination, so he ditched his tour group to better appreciate the museum's offerings. Now Kochkine combines his affinity for art with a generational love of engineering. His parents hold engineering degrees, his grandfather builds bridges, and his grandmother designed autopilot systems for Soviet fighter jets. Wow, that is a family, right? And there are lots of examples here of applying his techniques to these artworks. The article then does go on to showing how he does this and how the art restoration happens. It's really a fascinating article. And this is the kind of stuff where digital technology is important and can do just really wonderful things. If you're interested in this art restoration project, take a look at the link in the show notes. And finally, I just have to talk about this. What is the Kodak Charmera? A camera with just 1.6 megapixel of resolution taking Instagram by storm. This is an article on amateurphotographer.com. I have a link in the show notes. If you've been anywhere on Photography Reels or TikTok over the past week, you've likely already seen the Kodak Charmera. For those who haven't, a camera so small it can fit four of them in the palm of your hand is currently taking the internet by storm, with users in love with its colorful design and lo-fi charm. Even though its image-making capabilities are nowhere near those of the best compact cameras. Made by Retro Project in its ongoing licensing of the Kodak brand name, the Kodak Charmera was first announced earlier this month, with hype building across socials thanks to a few influencers getting their hands on them early. Those who were around in the 1980s will likely recognize those boxy dimensions, as the Charmera is explicitly modeled after the Kodak Fling a portable single-use camera with preloaded film. In case you weren't clear on the connection, the modern version's makers have gone to the trouble of writing 1987 on the box. Of course, the Charmera is digital rather than film. It sports a quarter-inch CMOS sensor with just 1.6 megapixel of resolution. It's proper point-and-shoot vibes with no exposure or focus control to speak of, though you can juice up your images with a selection of retro-styled filters. It may sound crazy that a 1.6 megapixel camera should prove so popular in 2025, but I think it makes sense. Pristine image quality isn't as important to many camera buyers as it is to pixel-peeping amateur photographers, with scuzzy compact cameras from the 2000s having made a comeback among Gen Z buyers who are embracing their imperfections as lo-fi charm. Kodak has absolutely nailed a crucial aspect of the Charmera's appeal, its kitschy fun factor. This is a good-looking camera with bright poppy design that comes in a range of retro styles. Also, in a gimmicky but creative bit of marketing, it comes in a mystery box that means you don't know which style you're getting before you buy. And then there's the price. It's just $29.99. A lot of these retro-style gimmick cameras can be a bit overpriced. Clearly, it's scratching the same itch as the likes of Fujifilm Instax and Polaroid. It's not for the quote-unquote serious photographers, but has a huge appeal for those who want to get away from their phones and create images that look and feel a bit different. It's proven such a hit already that Kodak Retro is having trouble keeping up with orders. The site currently warns that delivery may be delayed at least 1 to 5 days. So, if you like the look of this little camera, you may not want to wait too long to order. Boy, what a breadth of landscape we've talked about today, okay? Quality, not quality, AI-generated, not AI-generated, or looking back like 1989 all over again. Oh my gosh. Anyway, fun stuff. I'm glad that these little things are exciting people, because the one thing I want for anyone interested in photography is to be excited. Let's take care of a little virtual camera club business. I want to thank our Patreon members, the folks that support this podcast month in and month out, the folks that show up at our exclusive site for Inner Circle members, and the folks I'm going to be hanging out with next week in the Eastern Sierra for our Eastern Sierra Photography Workshop. I like the one-on-one stuff. I like being in person with other photographers. I like the human connection. So I'm not going to do AI-generated workshops, or I'm not going to do AI-generated online classes. I'm going to keep it personal, and that's probably how I'm going to go down swinging and waving and laughing and smiling, but that's just the way I roll. And our Inner Circle members are pretty much the same way. They like hanging out, and that's why they are part of it. And you can hang out online, you can hang out in person. We provide lots of ways to interact with your fellow photographers, but it all starts with clicking on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the digital story, nose around a bit, sign up, and the next thing you know, you'll be hearing from me getting you started with all the benefits of membership. And a big thanks to our Inner Circle members for supporting this podcast. And finally, I'd like to thank our good friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the digital story. I had another conversation with my son just a few days ago, and we were talking about printing. We're talking about his upcoming wedding. We're talking about, you know, printing the save the dates and the invitations and all that stuff. And finally, as we're trying to work through the details, I decided I'm just going to buy him a printer. So, because the more that we talked about it, if he were to borrow mine or one of mine and all that, I may never see it again. You know, there's some ambitious goals here with this project. And then we also sat down and we went to the Red River Paper site, and I showed him the sample packs, and I talked about, okay, you know, kind of think about how you want these things to look and feel. We talked about different surfaces, and the sample packs are such a helpful way to kind of hone in on what paper you ultimately want to use for your project. Now, when you go to the Red River Paper site, sample packs is this up there in the nav bar, and you can click on it, and they have a variety of different sample packs, and I highly recommend them to you if you're thinking about, okay, I want to do some portraits, or I want to do some landscapes, or I want to do wedding invitations, whatever it is you want to do. There's probably a sample pack or two that will help you decide which paper to use, and you can even do add-ons to the sample packs. So it's a very fun tool to help you make those paper decisions so you get exactly what you want. I think a lot of times people forget about them or don't even know about them in the first place. If you got a project coming up, I want to remind you the sample packs are a very cool tool to help you decide which paper you're going to get. They even mark on the back, you know, which stock it is, so that when you find exactly the right paper, you'll remember it. You keep that sample with you, and then you can order a box of paper to finish off your project. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for not only supporting photographers and wedding invitations and all that stuff all over the world, but also for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more stuff for next week. I'll be in the Eastern Sierra. Until then, get out there, take some pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.